Welcome to Ekatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, so today we are tackling a real literary giant, Vikram Seth's incredible novel, A Suitable Boy. I mean, if you're talking about sheer length, this has got to be up there. It's one of the longest single volumes in English, right? Almost 350 pages.
It really is a monumental read, definitely. And, you know, Seth himself, he's both a novelist and this incredibly precise poet that really comes through, I think, in the way he combines this vast social realism with a kind of classical structure. The book came out in 1993.
And the setting itself is just as epic as the page count. We're plunged right into North India in 1951, 1952. So this is a critical moment, isn't it?
Absolutely critical. India's just become independent. It's still dealing with the trauma of partition.
Yeah.
There are these huge debates about land reform, and the country's heading towards its very first general election. It's literally a nation figuring itself out.
Yeah, finding its feet.
Exactly. And amidst all that massive historical change, Seth grounds this enormous 600,000-word story in something incredibly simple, almost domestic. It all hinges on that unforgettable first line.
Ah, yes. "You too will marry a boy I choose," said Mrs. Rupamera firmly to her younger daughter. That line just sets everything in motion.
It really does. It frames the whole mission. Our deep dive today is really centered on Mrs. Mera's, well, frantic search, sometimes funny, sometimes desperate to find that suitable boy for Lada, her spirited 19-year-old daughter.
And that personal quest, finding a husband for Lada, it becomes this perfect little mirror for the bigger picture, doesn't it? India itself searching for its own future, its own suitable path forward.
Perfectly put. That domestic starting point immediately broadens out. The question becomes, what is suitable? Is it love, security, social standing, religion? And who gets to decide?
Right.
And that dilemma Lada faces, choosing between potential partners, it perfectly echoes India's own balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tradition versus modernity, the push for secularism against these deep-seated religious divides.
Mm. And to paint this wide picture, Seth gives us these four sprawling, interconnected families. We've got the Meras, obviously, then the Kapoors involved in politics, the very intellectual Chatterjees, and the respected Muslim family, the Khans.
Mm-hmm.
Their lives are all tangled together, creating this incredibly rich portrait of society at that time. But while Ladu is going through this quite managed, almost orchestrated search for a husband.
There's a whole other story exploding in the background.
Okay, actually, with Manin Kapoor. He's the younger son of Mahesh Kapoor, the revenue minister. Morin's story is the complete opposite of Lata's careful steps.
Oh, completely. His is all about wild passion, scandal. It's fascinating how quickly he falls into this all-consuming, almost ruinous obsession with Sayyidah by Ferozabadi. She's an older, captivating Muslim courtesan.
And that relationship, it's so volatile, so forbidden. It really highlights the dangers of desire when it crosses those strict social lines, class, religion. Mahin's journey is initially one of just, well, emotional recklessness, pushing against all the boundaries. It provides such a vital contrast, doesn't it? Leda's world is about thinking things through, consequences, duty. Man's is just raw impulse.
It really is. And looking at their journeys, Lattice starts off as this bright literature student, quite dutiful on the surface. She gets her ideas about life from books initially.
Right. Very theoretical.
Yeah. But her whole arc is about moving beyond the theory. It's about gaining this practical lived experience, this wisdom that helps her make her final choice, which in the end feels less about picking a husband and more about choosing a life.
And then there's Mrs. Rupamera, Lada's mother, sort of looming over everything. You can't talk about this book without talking about her, the sheer force of her personality, her anxiety.
Oh, she's unforgettable. A classic matriarch, really. Driven by this intense anxiety, but also this fierce, fierce love for her daughter. Every peer, every dramatic scene she causes, it comes from this deep fear of Lada making a mistake, marrying badly, disgracing the family.
Seth portrays her so well. You see, her motivations are protective, but her methods are often, well, quite over the top.
Definitely. She perfectly embodies that traditional viewpoint.
Yeah.
Marriage as a practical necessity, an alliance for security above all else.
Meanwhile, Mayank Kapoor is operating on a completely different wavelength. All heart, no head, initially. He alienates his powerful family, drains their money, all in pursuit of Sayyida Bai. His path is so self-destructive.
Until that awful moment of violence.
Yeah.
That drunken misunderstanding where he attacks his friend Firoz. That changes everything. It lands him in prison facing attempted murder charges.
A huge turning point.
Absolutely. Prison becomes his crucible. It forces him, really for the first time, to face actual consequences, legal consequences, public consequences. He has to grow up, basically, and understand the impact of his actions, especially the political fallout for his father.
Which brings us to Mahesh Kapoor, Mayank Singh's father. He's such a key figure embodying that post-independence idealism, isn't he? The Nehruvian vision.
Exactly. He's fighting corruption, pouring all his energy into getting the Zamindari Abolition Bill passed, this massive piece of legislation meant to break up the old feudal land system.
Yeah.
A real uphill battle.
But what's interesting is how his public idealism contrasts with, or rather connects to, his personal life.
Right. His deep friendship with the Nawab Sahib of Betar, a Muslim nobleman. It's more than just politics. It's presented as this genuine bond, a living example of the secular harmony India was striving for.
Even as prejudice and division are constantly threatening to tear things apart.
Precisely. It's a constant tension throughout the book.
Okay, so let's get back to Ledha and the heart of her dilemma. The three suitors.
Yeah.
Each one seems to represent a different kind of future, not just for her, but maybe for India too, in a way.
Yeah, the three paths. Let's break them down. First, you have Kabir Durrani. He's the romantic ideal, maybe the tragic one.
Her first love.
Right. Brilliant, a history student, a star cricketer. The connection is instant, powerful, but he's Muslim. And in the context of 1950s India, and certainly for Mrs. Mehra, that makes him fundamentally unsuitable.
A barrier erected purely by society, it feels quite tragic.
It is. Then the second option emerges in Calcutta, Amit Chatterjee. He represents intellectual attraction.
The sophisticated poet.
Exactly. Part of this very witty, Anglophile elite Calcutta circle. He offers Lata a life of art, ideas, clever conversation. It appeals to her mind, definitely. Represents a kind of westernized modernity.
But she has doubts, doesn't she, about his detachment, maybe a touch of self-absorption.
She does. She wonders if that kind of purely intellectual connection is enough, if it feels grounded. Which leads us to the third suitor, Haresh Khanna.
The practical choice, the shoe executive.
That's him. Constantly smelling faintly of leather. Seth uses that detail brilliantly. It signals his connection to industry, to practical work. Haresh is ambitious, down to earth, determined. He offers stability, earnestness.
Not the fireworks of Kabir or the glamour of Amit.
No, but he represents that striving, industrious spirit of the new India being built. He offers partnership, a shared effort in building a life.
So Lana's choice isn't simple at all. It's not good versus bad. It's weighing passion against intellectual connection against, well, solid dependability.
And questioning whether love has to come first or if it can grow from respect and suitability. That's the core tension for her.
Right. And while all this personal drama is unfolding, the bigger national picture keeps intruding, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Things escalate. A lot of secret meetings with Kabir are discovered, naturally causing a huge family meltdown. Mrs. Mehra, in her panic, literally drags Lata off to Calcutta.
Trying to break the connection physically.
Yep. And that leads to the Calcutta interlude, where Lata meets Amit and gets a taste of that different, more artistic world. It lets her try on a different identity, almost.
But back in their hometown, Brahmapur, things are getting tense.
Very tense. The underlying hostility between Hindu and Muslim communities reaches a boiling point during the Pul Mela, a huge religious festival. It erupts into a violent riot, a stampede. It's terrifying.
A stark reminder of how fragile that secular ideal really was.
Absolutely. And then, almost concurrently, you have Marian's personal crisis hitting its absolute nadir, that jealous, drunken attack on his friend Firoz.
Which lands him in jail. Attempted murder. The scandal is massive.
Huge. And it couldn't come at a worse time for his father, Mahesh Kapoor, politically. It threatens everything right before the elections.
So it's amidst all this turmoil, personal crises, political fragility, communal violence that Lata finally has to make her choice.
Yes, the pressure is immense. But she doesn't crumble. She actually becomes quite methodical, quite pragmatic in weighing up each man, asserting her own judgment over her mother's anxieties.
She realizes the passion with Kabir, however real, is just impossible given the social cost. Amit offers intellectual excitement, but maybe not partnership.
Right. And there's that wonderful line you mentioned from the source material, her internal thought. Lata felt a sense of liberation and possibility. She was not choosing a house and a city and a career. She was choosing a man.
A profound realization. And she chooses Haresh Khanna.
She does. It's presented as a quiet, considered choice. A choice for companionship, for mutual respect, for someone she can build a future with side by side.
And the novel kind of settles after that decision. It ends with weddings. Lata and Haresh have a simple, hopeful ceremony, and the election results come in. Life for these families and for India finds a way to move forward.
It does. It finds a new kind of equilibrium.
Thinking about the novel's legacy, those themes are still so resonant, especially that tension between tradition and modernity. You see it everywhere, Mrs. Mehra's views versus Lada's desire for self-determination, Mahesh Kapoor fighting the old feudal system.
Yeah, the book shows that progress isn't clean. It's always a negotiation, often a painful one, between the old ways and the new pressures. And of course, the theme of communal harmony versus religious tension remains incredibly relevant.
That friendship between Mahesh Kapoor and the Nawab Sahib feels like such an important symbol of the ideal.
Contrasted constantly with the prejudice that makes Lata and Kabir's love impossible. And Seth's writing style itself is remarkable. That third-person omniscient view letting us into everyone's head.
It gives you such a complete picture, doesn't it? A true panorama of the society.
Absolutely. And the structure you mentioned earlier, 19 parts, each starting with a little rhyming couplets summarizing what's to come.
It's such a unique touch, almost like leaning back on an older tradition amidst this very modern story.
Exactly. It gives it a kind of classical poise, a sense of order within the sprawling narrative. And the symbolism is often quite subtle, but effective, like Haresh in the shoe industry, representing the practical hands-on work of nation building.
A Suitable Boy really feels like a lesson in humane understanding. It suggests that maybe suitability in life or marriage isn't about perfection. It's about compromise, growth.
And finding happiness, not necessarily in grand, passion-fulfilled, but perhaps in the quieter accumulation of shared days, mutual respect, you know, building something steady together.
It definitely leaves you thinking. When you look at all the complex choices these characters face, balancing family duty, personal desire, societal pressure, intellectual needs, it makes you reflect on your own life, doesn't it?
For sure. How do we today navigate those same forces, balancing the heart, the head, and just the practical realities of living?
It's a question that feels just as urgent now as it must have felt in 1950s India.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.